19. The Cash Waterfall. In Hugo Chavez's Venezuela, ExxonMobil's strategy for attracting goodwill in the midst of political contention relied on the powers of art. The corporation staged a salon exhibition in Caracas at regular intervals, with prizes for the best work. It held the event at the National Art Gallery on the Plaza de los Museos. A serene neoclassical building housed the gallery on grounds that contained a manicured interior courtyard, weeping willows, and a small pond. Tim Cutt, an American who served as the president of ExxonMobil's Venezuela operations after 2005, presided over the exhibitions with the careful decorum of a museum curator who must please donors and patrons of impossible quirkiness and diversity. The tone Cutt and his colleagues sought to convey at the events was, "The art speaks for itself. It brings us all together." In Venezuela's eroding democracy, however, that wish proved increasingly difficult to fulfill. The trouble began as the 2006 presidential election approached. The long struggle between President Hugo Chavez and his opponents intensified. A son of school teachers, Chavez had enrolled at a military academy as a young man, played baseball, wrote poems, fought in counterinsurgency campaigns, and rose to the rank of lieutenant colonel. During the 1980s, he became involved in leftist movements seeking to challenge Venezuela's business and landed elites for power. With his red beret and fiery rhetoric, he emerged as a populist leader. He was jailed for his role in a 1992 coup attempt, and later won the presidency by promising to restructure Venezuela's corrupt, inequitable economy for the benefit of the poor. Once in office, he acted with increasing ruthlessness to consolidate power. Democratic, civic, business, and military forces opposed him. Venezuelan artists seized on the annual ExxonMobil exhibition at the National Art Gallery as a forum for dissent. They submitted to the contest only paintings oiled in black, with the map coordinates of Venezuela from west to east lightly etched on the dark canvases. ExxonMobil's Caracas executives decided they had little choice but to mount the stark paintings all around the gallery. The artists demanded the microphone at the exhibition's opening. The corporation's mortified local public affairs team negotiated an agreement to let them speak briefly. Tim Cutt yielded the floor. The artists explained, one after the other, that their paintings depicted the future of Venezuela under Hugo Chavez. It would be bleak, they said, in case anyone missed the symbolism of their canvases. They denounced the president and his encroachments on civic freedoms. ExxonMobil's executives nodded politely. This was the sort of awkwardness that had persuaded the corporation's engineer executives to steer clear of mainstream politics in the countries where they worked, and to concentrate as narrowly as possible on those issues that enabled oil and gas production. Now ExxonMobil had opened the door to art as politics, and there was little the Caracas office could do to reverse course, its local executives believed. If they canceled the next contest, they would signal fear or, worse, that ExxonMobil was somehow choosing sides in Venezuela's polarized polity. It was not clear whether Chavez or his opposition would prevail across the long arc of years by which ExxonMobil measured geopolitics. In 2002, the president had barely survived an uprising and coup attempt. Once the ExxonMobil art wars were launched, the Chavez regime acted decisively. It dispatched its own cadres to the next corporate salon. The Chavez loyalists took the floor and delivered pointed speeches against Yankee imperialism. There was nothing the ExxonMobil executives could or would do to stop them. The National Art Gallery was state-owned, and these were Venezuelan government representatives. Cutt and his aides reported the incident to their supervisors at the ExxonMobil upstream division in Houston. Their shared conclusion, said a former executive involved, was that this is going to be harder and harder to handle. ExxonMobil had multiple interests in Venezuela: downstream filling stations, some oil production ventures, and supply agreements that directed Venezuelan oil to a large refinery in Chalmette, Louisiana, which ExxonMobil owned jointly with Venezuela's state-owned oil company. The web of contracts, financing agreements, and supply linkages meant that confrontation with Venezuela's leader could prove unusually messy and costly. The dependency was mutual. Venezuela's oil was unusually sour, not suitable for most refineries worldwide, whereas the Chalmette facility was tailor-made to handle it profitably. Moreover, as the U.S. Embassy noted succinctly, Chavez's priority is regime survival. He needed oil royalties, profits, and taxes, the principal source of revenue for the Venezuelan treasury, to pay for expanded social spending born of his self-styled Bolivarian revolution. After the failed 2002 coup attempt, Chavez signaled in speeches and rambling television interviews that he intended to take greater control of Venezuela's oil industry, to challenge what he described as a dominance of foreign profiteers. Yet some of ExxonMobil's executives calculated that the president could not afford to spook international oil corporations precipitously or to trigger even more capital flight from Venezuela than was already taking place in response to the president's anti-business policies. As Chavez gathered power and increasingly employed the populist rhetoric of resource nationalism to stir his followers, ExxonMobil responded initially with uncharacteristic appeasement. During 2004, the president came under intense pressure from the Democratic opposition, a wave of resistance that culminated in the scheduling of a referendum in August of that year to determine whether he could continue in office. Part of the charge against him was that he was jeopardizing Venezuela's economy through his rash, irrational, corrupted populism. Chavez pressured the international oil companies in Venezuela to sign and publicize agreements with his regime on the eve of the election. Televised signing ceremonies would signal confidence in his presidency by bastions of global capitalism. ExxonMobil had been talking with successive Venezuelan governments for 9 years about a multi-billion-dollar petrochemical investment that would supply plastics to Latin America's burgeoning economies. It had never been able to close even a preliminary deal. Now Chavez volunteered to sign an initial understanding if ExxonMobil would agree to a televised signing ceremony 3 days before the referendum vote, effectively handing Chavez the American corporation's endorsement.